expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glick on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Elise Kling Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. I would like to announce very proudly that we gave birth to a new version of the Equifax Finance blog this week. So for all of you who go there regularly to check out our amazing experts and what they have to say about how credit relates to insurance and tax and real estate, we've added a new section called Family Money. And the whole point of this section on the Equifax Finance blog is to talk about issues relating to you and your money as it relates to the household. It has been such an incredibly tough 5 years. I know the recession officially ended in June of 2009, but it sure doesn't feel that way, particularly here in Atlanta, where home prices have dropped so low that some people have been rolled all the way back to where home prices were 12 or 13 years ago. And we're just seeing just a paltry number of homes actually sell, while a huge, I mean, unbelievably huge number of HUD homes, which are FHA foreclosures, come in to the marketplace, further depressing prices. So very, very tough situation. We talk about it all the time here in Atlanta. But on the Family Money section of the Equifax Finance blog, all of which is free, by the way, and we have 600 or 700 or 800 pages of helpful information with our experts who are monitoring it. We'll answer your questions online, and it's all free. And so we, you know, just trying to provide an opportunity for you to get great information from people who do this every day of the week. It's not like journalists writing about it. It's a top tax expert. It's a top insurance company owner. It's, you know, I write about real estate, as do a couple of other really smart people. So take advantage. Go to the Equifax Finance blog. You can just get to it through Equifax, which is the credit company, right? Equifax.com. Click on the finance blog and take a look at the Family Money section. I think you're going to be seeing some amazing work from people who are out there, mommy bloggers and other bloggers. Dan Solon, who's a good friend of the show, we're going to have some excerpts from his brand new book as well. We are trying to bring you some new insight this year to make your investing and your family money management so much more strategic in 2012. That is the buzzword of the year, strategic investing for your family money. So with that in mind, one of the things I wanted to talk about this week, and we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about the housing economy, what's going on. So we saw GDP numbers come in a little bit better than expected, about 2.8%, a little better than expected, but that was for the fourth quarter. But we're really not seeing the kind of movement that we were hoping to see. And sure enough, the housing industry, new housing industry, came in for the year. Total new home sales reported in December at 307,000. It was 7.32% fewer than a year earlier. Horrible. The total number of homes sold sunk to 302,000. It is a new low since 1963, when Uncle Sam first started keeping track of those numbers. And even though we have had an amazingly warm winter, I was just remarking on it, and, you know, here in Chicago, it's going to be 47 and 50 this week in Chicago. This is the end of January. It should be like 47 below zero here. It isn't. So even with incredibly great weather, which is good for new housing typically, and the lowest interest rates in history, right, and incredible affordability, nobody's buying new houses. And that's just not kicking into the larger economy. And I think part of the reason is, and we've talked about this, that we have had just, we've just been beaten around the barrel. There are so many people whose credit has sunk to all new lows who are in real trouble, and continue to be in real trouble, that there's just not enough help going on. The HAMP program's ridiculous. Obama, in his speech this week, talked about how he's going to push the banks to do principal reductions because that's the only thing that works. And when asked how many people would be helped, they just have given up on trying to estimate because they're nowhere near. They're nowhere near what they said, you know, the number of people who would be helped. So trying to find new ways to help people whose credit is a disaster, has come through the ringer during this great recession, which in my mind, for most Americans, is still going on, is something that I've been trying to do. So I've talked a little bit on the show about my involvement with the company eCredable, E-C-R-E-D-A-B-L-E. We talked about it a little bit last week. And the idea here is that there are 50 million Americans who don't even have credit. They have something called a thin credit file. They don't even show up on FICO. You go to them and you say, you know, pull your credit history at annualcreditreport.com, and they might try, nothing would come up. And so this company has been set up to help people like that and people whose credit has been destroyed to rebuild it in a bunch of different and interesting ways. And so I asked my good friend Steve Ely, who is CEO of the company, to join us online this morning to talk about eCredable and what we're trying to do there. And, it, you know, perfectly disclosing, by the way, that I sit on an advisory board with them. I create content. I tell you this all the time, but you know me. I'm on the up and up. I want you to know if I'm involved with something. Because I feel like we need to approach credit in a very different way in this country. Now, we saw over the last few weeks that Susie Orman came out with a prepaid debit card, also known as a stored value card, which, you know, and she's trying to shift the conversation from, instead of giving people credit for the things they charge but don't pay for, we want to give people credit for the things they do pay for. And while I do disagree with Susie on some things, I do agree exactly on that point. And Steve Ely, first, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Elise. Nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to have you on the show. So we've been talking a little bit about this comment that Susie Orman made offline, you know, this idea that we should be giving people credit for the things they do pay for, like, oh, I don't know, maybe the gas they put in their car or their rent or, I don't know, what are some of the things that we monitor on eCredable?
Well, some of the things that we like to help people with are the basic necessities of life, the things that people pay for every single month. Things like rent and utilities and phone bills and child care and alimony. And, gosh, if you send money back home to somebody and you do that on a regular basis and document it, we verify that for people. So there's any number of things that people just do as part of their day-to-day lives that they're not getting credit for today in the traditional credit system. And we've built a product here at eCredable that allows us to work with those consumers and help them prove that they are paying bills on a regular basis and they deserve credit for that.
Now, it's interesting because the difference between having credit and not having credit can be thousands of dollars and something as simple as, let's say, a car purchase. So we've talked on the show, we get calls every now and again from people who have to go to the kind of buy here, pay here sort of places. And the interest rates that they get on these cars, which are terrible, and they can't take them off the lot to go get them checked out, and you know, you're buying a substandard product, but you can't get it anywhere else, can't get a car because you can't get credit, and they call the show and they're paying 25-35% interest on these car loans. But if you could prove that you're credit worthy because of your monthly utility bills are always on time and your rent payments are on time, it seems like you could get a whole much better deal out there.
That's exactly what we're working on. We haven't yet solved the problem for cars, although we're working on that as I speak. But we have solved the problem for homes. That we work with a company called Churchill Mortgage that allows you to go to them, and if you have alternative credit, meaning you don't have traditional credit in terms of you have credit cards and car loans and mortgages that you've been building a traditional credit history with, but you have alternative credit, which are things like paying for rent and utilities, they will use our report and our credit rating, we rate people A through F, as a way to understand that this consumer is indeed a good-paying consumer and the kind of customer they'd love to have in a home mortgage. So in the case where, you know, somebody's out there trying to buy a home and they're sitting there thinking, wow, I'll never qualify for it because my credit stinks or I don't have any credit, well, if you come to eCredable and you determine that you can earn either an A or a B in our credit rating system, you absolutely can go to Churchill Mortgage, and they'll work with you to get you into a home.
Which is kind of amazing, and it makes all the sense. So let's back up for a little bit and explain to people why this works, because it didn't used to be, alternative credit didn't actually exist as an entity until what? It was a couple of years ago when the government put in some new rules that said, mortgage lenders, you are now required to consider alternative forms of credit. And I know, I should tell you folks listening at home, that Steve used to run a big division at Equifax. In fact, it's the division that hired us to do the Equifax finance blog for them, so I've known him a long time. Steve, give us a little bit of the history of how alternative credit kind of came to be a thing as opposed to nothing.
Yeah, back around 2001, 2002, there was a pretty big movement around the United States, as we all remember, to try to get every American into a home. You know, live the American dream, go buy your own home, own something that is an investable asset that you can keep for a long time and get a lot of financial benefit from. And at that time, there was no financial credit model, if you will, that allowed mortgage underwriters to look at people that didn't have traditional credit and consider them for a home loan. So HUD got together with Fannie and Freddie and VHA and FHA and said, let's create a model so that our underwriters, your underwriters, can submit a loan package that includes alternative credit information. And so that's exactly what they did. They put together a model that said, if someone's going to apply using alternative credit, we'd like to see some really solid payment history from things like rent and utilities. We'll also accept things like insurance premiums and a few other things. And so that the HUD model was just the kind of the foundation for building the structure for alternative credit. There was also, and right at the same time as that existed, there's a clause in the Equal Credit Opportunity Act that most consumers have never heard of, which actually is a law that allows you that any time you apply for a credit with a business, that the law empowers you to submit anything that demonstrates your credit worthiness. Well, you have all this other information not being reported to the credit bureaus that could absolutely prove that you're credit worthy. And most creditors, while they certainly know about the law, they don't like to talk about it because, frankly, it's a hassle for them. If you were to walk into a bank or a mortgage company and say, hey, I'd like to apply for a credit line and I've got this, you know, shoebox full of invoices and receipts and canceled checks to prove that I pay my bill on time, you can imagine what they're going to think. They don't want anything to do with that because that's just a whole lot of work for them to sift through that information, to understand the value of it, to verify it, which is a really big problem. You know, nowadays it's kind of easy to fake things, and they don't want to be responsible for somebody coming in and producing a document or something that isn't indeed valid. And so, you know, that's just a big struggle for them. So now what exists, though, is the ability for a consumer to use this alternative credit. We verify it for them so that they know when they go present it to somebody that that potential creditor is getting verified information from a credit reporting agency. You know, we operate under the FCRA, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, just like a credit bureau does. And so we're all on the up and up here and can help consumers, frankly, help themselves when it comes to credit.
It's sort of amazing. All right, we're going to take a short break. Folks, Steve is actually, we're, you know, here live, and if you've got a question about alternative credit and whether it might help you, I want to open up. We have a couple of calls waiting, and we are going to get to you, Terry and John, so stay with us. But I would like to give you an opportunity to talk to Steve before he leaves today. 404-872-0750, if he can answer a question for you about alternative credit and what it might mean. But this is an idea whose time has come. And I know it started back in 2001. I started writing about it in 2001. But now there are wheels turning. There are mechanisms that are starting to become available. And for all the people who listen to Dave Ramsey on our show and who are Dave Ramsey followers, of which there are many, Dave Ramsey has endorsed eCredible because he recognizes that it meets his needs of not having credit cards to verify that you are a good credit risk. Really. So we're going to talk to you a little bit more about this. I want to leave, let the phone lines go open, 404-872-0750. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more. Steve will stick around and answer your calls next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. We're having a special show just this hour talking with Steve Ely, CEO of eCredible, about alternative credit and how that works for you or how it could work for you. Charlie is on the line from Cumming. Hey, Charlie, what's your question for Steve?
Well, I just have two questions. One is, is a person who has alternative credit history going to have to pay a higher rate?
That's a good question, Steve.
Yes. So it depends upon the lender. Some of them are going to give you, it depends on their underwriting model. So let me talk about Churchill Mortgage in particular, because that's the one that I'm most familiar with. They're not going to charge you any different rate than if you had a good FICO score. And so if you went through their application process, they would tell you right up front that based upon the rating that you have from eCredible, what kind of terms you could expect to get from them on a mortgage. I will tell you that we use a rating model that works pretty much like a credit score. We don't use the term credit score because it's not based upon credit. It's based upon the payments you make every month. And what we do is we take the payments that you make and we look at a two-year history of those payments and run you through a model that rates you A through F. In the case of Churchill Mortgage, if you have an A or a B, they will accept you into their application process and work with you on getting you into home loan. And so I don't know what their current terms are. I don't want to keep with that, up with that on a daily basis. But they are absolutely competitive and favorable.
All right, Charlie, quick second question.
Quick second question is, well, it seems like this is a program that the government should endorse. And is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going to approve this type of credit scoring?
Another good question.
That's a great question. They actually have for years. Today, if you were to apply for a mortgage that is FHA, VA, Fannie, or Freddie certified, they absolutely accept alternative credit in the underwriting process. Something you need to be aware of is that if you're new to credit, meaning you don't have an established traditional credit history and therefore no FICO score, you would rely exclusively on the credit rating from eCredible. And so that's all you would have to go on. But let's say that you already have credit. You've been around for a while and you maybe used to be a really high 700 and, you know, you lost your job in the last two or three years and your credit took a hit and now you're down in the 640s or something like that. A mortgage company is always going to look at your other credit score first, at your traditional credit score first, like the FICO score, and assess that first. Then they're going to look at the eCredible and attempt to combine the two. And so I don't want to mislead anybody and say that you can have a terrible FICO score and a great eCredible rating and still go get a really good rate.
Right.
They are going to look at both of those.
But this is exactly for people who don't even have anything that would even relate to a FICO score. And when we come back, we'll tell you a little bit about somebody who called Steve last week, a Dave Ramsey follower, who couldn't even honestly get a secured credit card to save his life. Thank you so much for your call, Charlie. 28 minutes past the hour in the Elyse Kling Show. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Sunday, Elyse Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Glink Show live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. We're talking about alternative credit and how you qualify for mortgage loans, if you want to buy a house and you have terrible credit or you have no credit. 50 million Americans don't have any credit. It's called a thin credit file, or basically they don't have a credit file. And if they went to FICO or MyFICO or even annualcreditreport.com and they tried to get a copy of their credit report, nothing might come up. It might not even recognize them. And so we're talking online today with Steve Ely, who is the CEO of eCredable, eCredable.com, eCredable, which is not the first company to do this, but I think the company to do it best, where they are pulling the alternative credit that the government says lenders have to recognize to show that they're creditworthy. Things like your utility payments or your wireless phone payment or your rent every month. These kinds of pieces of alternative credit are crucial to people understanding that they can rebuild or build credit that will be accepted by lenders. And so Steve is on the line with us, and we wanted to, I wanted you to tell the story about this Dave Ramsey caller, listener. We have Dave Ramsey, as you know, Steve, is a big shot on our station, as he is all over the place, and he has endorsed eCredable, and one of his people called you because he had this problem. You and I were talking about this the other week. Why don't you tell that story?
Yes, a guy called in saying that he was having a hard time even getting a secured credit card. You know, most people when they go apply for credit, when they get started building credit, one of the typical first piece of advice that you'll see is someone will say, well, go get a secured credit card. meaning go to a bank or a credit union and put $500 or $1,000 in the bank. That is effectively your collateral against them extending a line of credit for the same amount. Then what happens is you pay that off month over month over month, and then the bank or the credit union reports that to the credit bureaus, and then it, over time you start to build a credit file. So there's probably two notable challenges with that. The first is it just takes time. You know, I think a lot of people think that going and getting a secure card is just a magic bullet, that it's like, wow, all of a sudden now I'm going to have a great credit and I can go do what I need to do. That's not really reality. It's a first step and possibly a good step for you, but it's not going to give you instant credit. So you can now go out and get a major credit card with a $5,000 limit on it or something like that. So that's the first challenge with it. The second challenge with it is that, believe it or not,
Steve? Oh, my goodness, I think... Steve, you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, and the second challenge, we missed the second part of that.
Oh, sorry about that. And the second challenge is a lot of banks and credit unions won't even give you a secured credit card unless you already have some other credit history, believe it or not, which is the problem that this particular individual had. He was living in somewhere in West Virginia and struck out with three local banks and credit unions that just did not want to extend him a secured card at all. And so here's a case where alternative credit could absolutely come to the rescue here, because the beauty of the way that our product works is that you don't have to start today and start building credit over time for the future. If you've been paying your bills on time for the last few years, it could be less than 2 years, it could be even 1 year, but you've been paying your bills on time and you have some reasonable bills, like you're paying rent, utilities, and car insurance and things like that, that's all we need to understand your current credit situation. And so we can produce a credit report for you with a credit rating that helps demonstrate your credit worthiness, so you can then present that to a bank or credit union and have a conversation with them, which will help them understand your current situation. And so it's just a really good alternative that people just don't know about. And one of the things that we're trying to do is simply educate people on that.
So, Steve, how does it work with eCredible so everybody understands? Let's say they sign up for the program. What happens next?
Yeah, there's two things that happen. First of all, you need to sign up and become a member. We have a lot of member benefits, things like really rich educational content to help you understand the basics of how to get started to be a financially responsible person, how the credit system works, the good and the bad of credit. You know, there's a lot of people that get into trouble with credit. We're trying to steer them down a path so they don't misuse credit. And so we have a lot of things like that. We also have this very powerful tool. We call our credit rating the AMP credit rating. AMP stands for All My Payments. We have this really powerful tool, which is a credit rating simulator, which actually allows you to simulate exactly what you need to do in order for you to earn an A. If you come in and you start out, and let's say that you enter in your information, which is all the bills you're currently paying, what's the amount due, when was the last time you paid that, who do you pay it to, when you enter that information for us, that gives us a baseline so we kind of know where you stand. Well, let's say that you come in and you're a C and you want to become an A. You can use our simulator so that you know exactly what you need to do and exactly how long it will take for you to go from a C to a B to an A. And assuming that that A is going to be the time or the event that you need, so you can go get the new car, get the home loan, you know, get the better apartment, whatever it is that your objective is, use credit for, becoming a member and using our credit rating simulator allows you to do that. So that's a big part of the experience. Well, as time goes by, and now let's say you've earned your A, you've reached your goal now, then you actually need to have that information verified. And you simply tell us, here's all the accounts that I have open, my rent, my utilities, my insurance, my child care payments, whatever it is that you're paying regularly, you ask us to verify that information on your behalf. We verify that information for you, we put it into your credit report, and we rate it, we give you a final rating, you know, A through F, hopefully now you're an A, and now you can use that credit report and share it with any potential creditor. And again, I'll remind people that under the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, they are required by law to consider this information.
Well, I think it's an amazing, as everybody knows, because I have worked with you before, and now I'm working with you on this project, and we've provided a lot of that content that you spoke so nicely of. Thank you. Steve and I have set up some more information for you to find out about this. It's at eCredable, eCredable. .com/glink, G-L-I-N-K. We did not make you try and type my first name in because, of course, nobody can spell that. But glink isn't too bad. It rhymes with think, glink, right? And I'll put a link up at thinklink.com on today's blog as well. And you can get more information. There are some special deals, discounts that only WSB listeners will be able to get if you go to that link. And we would love to be able to help you. This is really what... It's such, as you know, because I try to help you day in and day out on this show, helping when I fill in for Clark, all the columns that I write, all the books. You know, I'm all about trying to help you make smarter decisions with your money. This is an amazing opportunity for people who can't even get a loan to start to work within an established parameter, established paradigm that already exists for the government that more people need to use. And so, Steve, I'm really happy you were able to join us today and talk a little bit about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elise. It's good to talk to you again.
All right. It is to you, too, and we'll speak again soon. Thanks so much. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Let's go back to our phone calls. Terry's been hanging out for a long time. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Elise Klink Show. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. I need a sounding board is what I need.
All right.
I've got a home that probably needs about $20,000 worth of repairs. We've owned it since 07. It was a foreclosure. We didn't get it inspected. I could kick myself for that. But where we are in our current situation, I'd have to take monies out of retirement to pay for these repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just agonizing over what should I do in this situation. I'm trying to decide whether, you know, one of my thoughts is when I'm talking to my wife, let's just buy another house and let this one go into foreclosure. I know that takes a hit on the credit, and I don't want to take the hit there. I don't know much about short sales. I listen to Dave Ramsey also, and I've heard him give different ones advice about short sales. I don't know if, and this is just something I thought about, but I said to myself, you know, I need some encouragement in terms of whether or not my mortgage company would do a home swap with me. Take this one back and give me one that we can get inspected. I don't know if any transactions even exist like that. But that's basically where I'm at. And then the last piece of that is you on a previous show mentioned to a caller about contacting some organization where they could find an attorney to help them through their situation. Because you were giving them some advice about if the short sale, you end up owing on the short sale, they're going to come after you for the balance. And
they could.
And because I know that we have the money, you know, some way or somehow I need to protect that if I decide to go this route of foreclosure and just let this house go.
Well, they can't come after your retirement money.
Okay.
So if your money's in a 401k or some sort of IRA, they can't come after that money. That's your money. They might try to guilt you into spending it, but they can't take it.
Okay.
How much is the house worth, and how much do you have a mortgage on it still?
I have a mortgage on it, two mortgages, and the house is probably worth, I'm going to say about $90,000.
And how much do you owe?
Probably about $105,000.
Okay. All right, so you need the $20,000 worth of repairs. Do you still want to live in this house?
No.
Because you're angry at the house, or you changed your mind, or you want to live somewhere else, or what?
Well, I want us to be closer to our jobs. We are quite far from our jobs. My wife works for the airline, so there's a possibility we may be moving to another state.
Okay.
But I have a daughter here in college, so we want to keep some. So those are all the things I'm wrestling with.
So, you know, it seems to me that if you have a daughter in college, that you probably want to stay local, at least some part of that, right?
Mm.
I mean, especially if she's in a local college and you're getting in-state tuition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to disappear too soon.
No.
But you're so close. You're only about $15,000 underwater with this property, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be important to get on the right side of it. If you sold this house and you had the $15,000, you would be done. Right, you could $15,000-$20,000. You could just walk away without going into, you know, having the house go into foreclosure and go through the short sale experience. My sense is you may not be able to sell the house through
Correct.
The short sale.
Yeah.
So it's really about letting the house go into foreclosure, and then you still would want to buy another house. You wouldn't be able to get a loan for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd go into a timeout box. I think a better idea is to, if you want to sell the house, try and sell it for $90,000 and then just kick in the $20,000 to bring it whole and walk away whole. Because that way, if you want to go buy another house, you can. Or if you just want to rent a property, which is what I would recommend if you think you might be leaving the state, then you have that going for you. Now, if the house needs $20,000 worth of repairs, somebody may not pay you $90,000, they may pay you $70,000. And that's going to be a bigger issue. And I think you should really sit down and think about the numbers and think about, you know, what it would take to get this property fixed. There's, you know, can you get a lower interest rate, do a home affordable refinance program, a HARP 2.0 refinance? Can you help that way to try and get on the right side of this? Are there other things that you could do? Those are the kinds of things that you want to talk about and think about. But I can't tell you, you know, let this house go into foreclosure, because it will profoundly affect what you do for the next 5 years. It's fine to take a hit on your credit if you don't need credit, but if you're planning on buying a house or you need to get a car loan or a credit card, you're going to have some problems. So you really have to think through exactly what it is you want to do and what is the price you're willing to pay. And while you're sick of this house, and you could just do a short sale or foreclosure, you just have to talk to an attorney, and I'll tell you how to find one in a moment, who can explain to you the legal obligations you might have or options you may have. I just want you to go into it knowing what you know, what you don't know. Right now, you don't know what you don't know, right? But you need to know those things so you can make a smart choice. If you call the Atlanta Bar Association, you can ask for the head of the real estate committee. That person will... You tell them your story, what you're trying to do, and they will recommend somebody, a real estate attorney, who can help you think through those options. It's the best way to find someone, because you just want to find somebody who actually understand what's going on with sort of the general situation where lenders are going, what your lender in particular is doing, and can help you make a really smart choice. And let me know what happens, okay? 404-872-0750. Don't forget to pick up this today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There is a special report that exposes the close relationship between lobbyists and state legislators and how that affects you. It's 10 before the hour, AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glick on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glick Show. 404-872-0750. So glad you could join us today. John joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, John. John? Hello, John?
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. Real quick, I was just wondering about day trading, if you can give me any guidance or any direction about that.
Yes, don't do it. day trading is one of those things. I absolutely do not believe in it for average human beings. I think that there's a rarefied group of people who day trade and get lucky, but over time... I think there are very few people who make money day trading. I know a few of them, and they work really hard at it. They build big companies that do it. It's really not for your average mortal. And dipping in and out of pink sheet stocks or even big stocks just on the day's trade, how would you even research what a company like that is doing that would give you any insight into whether their stock is going up or down? And so what it seems to me is that day trading really for most people is like gambling.
Okay.
It's literally like going to Las Vegas and playing the slot machines. And if you do that enough times, you're going to win. But if you look at the aggregate of how much you put in versus, you know, how much you get out, I would say it's a losing game from the very beginning. It's really like a gamble. And I, as you know, because you probably listen to the show all the time, I don't believe in gambling. I believe in having enough information to really make very smart decisions about your money, and that, you know, long-term investments in the stock market are a great idea. Great idea.
So what you're saying, most of people that tried, they just lose and bounce right out.
That's right. They lose because, you know, think about all the things that go on with companies, right? And think about all the things that you would have to know and read and the 10K reports. You'd have to go to the listen in on the annual meetings. You'd have to follow a company so closely that you're like an analyst to really have any idea whether or not that company is worth investing in, let alone whether you should be in and out of their stock six times a day. So I really don't buy the whole idea of day trading. I just think it's not a good solution for 98% of the people out there, including myself. I do not do it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We got a whole other hour coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750. If I can help you out this morning, happy to do it. We are also online all the time. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out the blog, see what's going on. All things Glink. Happy to help you out if we can. 404-872-0750. We have a couple of people hanging on from last hour. So why don't we do that, and then we're going to talk about the new expanded aid program for delinquent homeowners that HUD announced this week. So stay tuned for that.
Whatever.
Betty joins us on the line now.
Me.
Hey, Betty. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I have a modification on my home,
mm-hmm.
which was $450,000 valued when I built it, and it's in tip-top shape.
And what is it worth now?
It's worth $250,000.
I'm so sorry.
Me too.
Yeah, I bet.
But I live on a farm, and that includes 3 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And I have gotten this modification, and it's with Bank of America.
Okay.
My husband passed away in the meantime, which took a great deal of my income. I have a rental, which I understand they don't even consider anymore as income. Is that correct?
Well, it depends for what. They may consider it as income.
Well, I don't know, but anyway, what I want to know is I have a 6.75% or something, more than 6% interest rate on this, and it's $1,333 a month, and it's killing me. I'm having to go into my savings every month just to make the payments.
All right, and you're trying to get, but you've already had one loan modification.
Yes, I have, but I want them to reduce that interest rate some for me, which would reduce my payment, and I'd be all right.
So what were you paying before if you got a reduction to 6.75%?
Well, I didn't get a reduction.
Well, what
they
did you
gave me no reduction.
What did you when you say you got a loan modification? What kind of loan modification did you get?
I don't know. I just know they said that they weren't going to foreclose. Was all I cared about at the time.
Okay. So, Betty, first thing is that if you've had one loan modification, if you truly had a loan modification, you can't get another one. So
no.
That you just can't.
All I want them to do is reduce my interest rate.
I understand, but that would be another loan modification.
Oh,
so,
it would.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
shoot.
If you have a loan modification, that then you can't get another one. But maybe you didn't get a loan modification. Did they send you papers?
Yeah.
What do the papers say?
I don't know.
You have to go find the papers and take a look. Right?
Yeah.
You gotta figure out what you're actually doing. Do you know what kind of a loan you have?
Yes, it's a Freddie Mae, Fannie Mae, whatever that is.
Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac?
Yeah,
loan?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that means it's a conventional loan, but it must have been something pretty unusual because your interest rate is pretty high. When did you get this loan?
I got it probably a year ago.
Okay, so you did get an interest rate reduction at the time?
No.
This is just a new loan?
It's just a new loan.
Okay. I think you need to take a look at what they gave you, the paperwork that they gave you. I'm going to give you a phone number to call. I have no idea if you're going to qualify or not for a new...
Well, what I thought was maybe I could get it refinanced.
You can't because you're $200,000 underwater.
Oh.
So unless you have $200,000 hanging around, you can't.
No. Well, it's not.
Okay.
I don't have that.
Right. So you need to call the Homeowners Hope Hotline, which is sanctioned by the government. They're there to work with people like you to figure out if there's anything that can be done.
Okay.
The number is 888-995-HOPE. 888-995-HOPE.
Okay.
And you need to talk to them and tell them what happened, but you have to have your paperwork in front of you.
Well, I'll get that paperwork out and read it and see what it says.
That would be great. I know when your husband died, I'm sure that you were thrown into complete and total turmoil.
Yes.
And now if you're looking for help, you just have to take some time to figure out where you are so somebody else can know how to help you.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome,
and
Betty.
I will do that.
Call back and let me know what happens, okay?
I sure will.
All right. You take care. It's 12 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Brian joins us on the line. Hey, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Ms. Glenn. Thank you for taking my call.
You're more than welcome.
Got a question for you. I'm seeking some wisdom, and I hope you have it.
I hope I do, too. I was up late last night, so I don't know.
Okay. I looked at the assessed value on my property taxes, and my loan's about $50,000 above what the assessed value is. And I'm wondering, and I just really don't think housing value is going to come back anytime soon. And I'm wondering if it's worth it to continue to pour money into something that you're really never going to get a payoff out of.
So first of all, the tax assessed value doesn't necessarily have anything to do with reality. So as bad as you think it is, it could actually be a lot worse. So how much is your loan?
$235,000.
And you think that the assessed value is what, $185,000?
$185,000 is what it shows on my property.
What are homes selling for in your neighborhood?
Well, there haven't been that many sold in the last year or two, maybe two of them.
Okay.
And I'm not sure exactly what they sold for. One of them I know was foreclosed, but the other two I think were probably pretty much at the builder's prices, which was hopefully in the 250 to 270 range, which is basically what mine was in. So that's kind of what I'm dealing with.
All right. Well, you need to find out what homes are selling for. So I had a conversation with a guy yesterday who is trying to sell his late stepfather's house. And the first broker came in and said, oh, we should price it at $450,000. And he told me that. I said, that's ridiculous. Maybe at the height of the market, right, it might have been like something around $400,000. And now property prices are down $30,000 to $50,000 in his neighborhood. I said, probably the house is worth like somewhere between $200,000 to $300,000.
Right.
And, in fact, the property next door, he says, oh, well, the property next door just sold for $150,000. It was a foreclosure.
Right.
I'm like, okay, well, that $150,000 just brought your property price down a whole chunk. Because even though the house is bigger and on a bigger piece of land, you now have this house just sort of sitting there that sold for $150,000. So, Brian, the first thing you need to do is figure out what homes are selling for. Right? And
okay.
In your neighborhood. And then you can kind of back into, what do you think the house is worth? And then you have to make the next decision, which is, let's say you're right, and the value is really $185,000, and you owe $235,000. Now you have to decide if you're willing to let the house go into foreclosure, step away, and rebuild your credit over the next 5 years, because once you let a house go into foreclosure, it'll be 5 years before you can buy another property again. And
right.
That's called a strategic default, and people do it all the time. And I'm not,
right.
I don't advocate for or against. It's a business decision, not a moral decision. You have to decide what you want to do. If it was a bank and they had a bad business decision, they would cut their losses and move on. And that may
right.
be what's right for you. But you have to think, unlike a bank, right, that does that, bank will still be able to get more money the next day. You have to decide what kind of credit needs you're going to have, both personally and professionally. If you can afford to take that kind of a hit on your credit, some people call the show, they can't because they work in jobs where their credit is checked, and they have to have a good credit history because they work with money. So all of these things go in.
As far as any credit, or there's no car payments or anything like that. So,
It may be absolutely the right thing for you to do. I just want you to understand sort of what it is you're doing before you do it, right? And have some real hard numbers against it. You may even want to talk to some of the local real estate agents who are trying to sell homes or do sell homes in the area.
Right.
You may want to talk to them and see what value is and are homes moving. And honestly, I keep saying week in and week out, Atlanta has been hit far harder than almost anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I get it. It's Atlanta. It's the entire state of Michigan. I have a friend in Atlanta who's been trying to sell her house in Michigan for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
I mean, she can't even give the house away.
Right.
So there are some places that are worse off than here, but you just have to have a more, you know, like Betty, you have to kind of have a more informed look before you can make a big decision like this. This is a big decision, and you want to make the right decision for you. And you got to know a little bit more about what's going on in the neighborhood. And once you do, then you'll be able to figure it out. And please, once you get some of these numbers, feel free to call us back, and we're happy to weigh in again. No problem at all. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Joey joins us on the line. Hi, Joey.
Hi, how are you doing, Ali?
Good. What's going on today?
Well, I have a question about my mortgage modification. It happened probably, it was done probably about a year ago. And unfortunately, I was behind on my mortgage. I probably was anywhere roughly $12,000 to $15,000 behind.
Okay.
My mortgage was about $120,000. And the way they did the modification, they took those missed payments, say the $15,000, and they didn't just say, okay, we're going to extend the loan by 15 months. They took that money and added it on top of the principal and then lowered my interest rate from about 7% to about 5.5%.
Uh-huh.
But it, that caused my principal to go up that extra $15,000, and it really didn't affect it. It lowered my rate a little bit, but it just seems like that's taken... Now I'm paying interest on interest that was missed. It just doesn't seem, I don't understand why they didn't just extend my, if they were going to do that, just say, okay, you missed that, that's fine, we're going to extend your loan, same principle, by 15 months.
Because you would, it's the same thing, either way. It's still interest on interest, but what they did is perfectly appropriate. They took the amount of money, they brought you current, right? They're now
right.
reporting you
right.
as current.
Correct.
And they just added that money to the mortgage amount, and you have to pay interest on it. They probably may have added some fees as well, although in a lot of these loan
right.
locks, they're wiping out all the fees, and they're not adding that. So what they did was perfectly appropriate, and you agreed to it. And now if you want to make it up, the best thing you can do is prepay your loan, because you can do that.
Okay. So it actually, by doing the modification, you're increasing your principal as well as lowering the interest and things like that.
It depends. There's a push to try and get principal reductions for people who are way underwater.
Right, right.
So some people were behind because they lost a job, but they weren't really underwater, right? They just
right,
sort of lost
absolutely.
A job.
Right.
Those people get different loan modifications than people who are way underwater and might walk away. And it's not done in a particularly intelligent or fair way. All the lenders
right.
do it on a voluntary basis.
Okay.
And, you know, basically what you did was save your home from foreclosure.
Exactly.
And
Absolutely.
So I think that that's a pretty good thing overall.
Right.
It's good for your neighborhood to not have another foreclosure, and it's good for you personally.
Okay.
And if you don't stay in that house until the loan is paid off, it won't really matter to you. But
right.
I would suggest that you try, if you don't have a lot of equity in the house, that you do try to prepay as much as you can, because that will
okay.
get you to a place where you'll have more options. And really, it's all about options. You'll have the option to refinance to a lower interest rate. You'll have the option to sell the house if you want to and not have to come up with a huge check at the closing. You know, there are definitely more options available to you. But the fact that you got a loan modification is kind of amazing, because not that many people got them. And it sounds like it brought you current, and now they're reporting you as current, and that's really good for your credit. It's going to help you rebuild, and that gives you options as well. 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750. 21 minutes past the hour. When we come back, we've got a prize pack to give away this week. So I'm going to do that. We'll take some more questions. We'll talk about the economy next on News Talk WSB.
Money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Well, I was going to do a prize pack, but we can't locate it at the moment. So there is one, and we're just going to have to get to it in a couple of minutes. So stay tuned for that. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Mark joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Liz?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I do have two questions. Can you please tell me when the HARP 2 is going to go into effect?
It has already gone into effect. The HARP Home Affordable Refinance Program 2.0, the new and improved version, has went into effect, I think, December 1st, maybe, or November 1st. But for people who are way underwater...
which is my case.
Okay, that was going into effect the first quarter of the year, so we're about a third through the first quarter, and it's supposedly going into effect right around now. But it might be, for your lender, sort of the end of the quarter, like February or March, or it might have already happened. So you have to call your lender and talk to them, or you can call the Homeowners for Hope hotline, 888-995-HOPE, and talk to them about it.
Yeah, the second question. Can I get the refinance?
Yeah, can you what?
Yeah, can I do my refinancing, using any mortgage broker, or it has to be, through my...
No, you have to start with, if you're going to do the HARP 2.0, you actually have to start with your own lender. And once you do, you start with your lender, then you'll be able to figure out what's going on. But when you are so far behind, like you are, it makes it very, very difficult to actually refinance anywhere else. Just nobody wants to do it. So talk to your lender. Call the Homeowners for Hope hotline, 888-995-HOPE. 28 minutes past the hour. We got that prize pack in. We'll do it right when we come back. So stay tuned after news to News Talk WSB.
Money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining us this Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. Online all the time, thinkglink.com. So we have our prize pack to give away, the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack, value $269. It includes a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Gladiators take on Greenville on February 4th at the arena at Gwinnett Center. And it includes a maintenance agreement for your home's HVAC, courtesy of Shumate Air Conditioning and Heating, and a four-pack of tickets to the 15th Annual North Atlanta Home Show, February 10th through the 12th at the Gwinnett Center. We're going to give that away to the fifth caller, to the prize pack line only, at 404-741-0750. Fifth caller, be nice to Fred. He's taking your calls today. 36 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones, see who we can help. Paul joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know. I think I heard this about a week or two ago, and I don't know if it was a state or a national politician said that he thought that possibly they should allow the people that have to sell a property at loss to write that off, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the only thing now is when you sell a home, it used to be when you sold a home and there was a gain, after all expenses, commissions, etc., you pay tax if there was a gain. I don't think there is anything on the books now that says if you, let's say you were talking to someone earlier that their home was around $400,000 and is now valued around $200,000. So my question is that, do you think that's a good idea that if someone was underwater, I'm not talking about losing a home through foreclosure, but just the standard everyday selling of a home, and you lost because of the market conditions, say $100,000 to $200,000. A, do you think that would ever pass? And B, do you think that would be incentive to get the real estate properties moving? Because a lot of people today will not sell for that reason.
Well, first of all, I think I agree with you in that I don't know of any tax deductions for selling a principal residence as a loss. Right?
Yes.
You get to keep $500,000 if you're married, $250,000 in profits tax-free when you sell, which is kind of nice. But nobody has any profits right now, or very few people. So there are no deductions. The idea that a deduction could incentivize somebody to move their property, I'm not quite sure how that would play out. Because a deduction, well, I just don't, first of all, I don't ever see it passing. And secondly, I think for most people, the losses, like in Atlanta, are so huge, could take years and years and years to get back on the other side of it. And I just don't think our Treasury can handle that.
Yeah, I don't know how the structure would work, but right now, if someone's sitting on a property and they have to sell and they're not in trouble, you know, they've made all the payments and they bought the property for three and it's valued at two, I mean, it's kind of bleak.
Well, it is, but, you know, it's less bleak through the end of 2013 than it would be because the IRS treats that as phantom income. So that's if you go into foreclosure, right, and you lose $100,000 on your house, the IRS says, that's actually income. That was a debt forgiven. And that's income to you, and they would normally charge you income tax on it. So to compound the kick in the teeth you've just taken, you would then have to pay income tax at your marginal rate, which if you added $100,000 to anybody's marginal rate, it puts you in a pretty high tax bracket.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Based on what you just said, that if it's a short sale, and they normally would treat it as income, but it's my understanding that if it's your primary residence, that is forgiven, and that is actually as of today.
Yes, that is correct.
Why wouldn't that, well, I guess you're saying in next year that's going to be treated equally.
It's going to go away. It's only a special thing that came about because of what was going on with the market and realizing that if you're selling at a short sale and you don't even have enough money to go even on what you owe, you probably don't have any money to pay the taxes on it as well.
Don't you think, though, that something has to happen? Because, you know, as I ride around various subdivisions, including my own, the supply is getting larger and larger and larger, and there are just not buyers out there, and something has to trigger something to happen, because once the momentum begins, I think that you'll see some sales. And whether the market, obviously, one could say that it was overpriced to begin with, and maybe this is where it should be, I don't know. But it usually takes something, a trigger, to get something to happen because, I'm not in the real estate business, but it just seems to be just such a very limited activity now. And I keep on thinking, do you think the government, there's something, as they encourage people to be homeowners, 8 years ago, whatever it was, that maybe they've got to continue to do something to incentivize people to sell their homes?
Well, here's the problem, Paul, and I think it gets a little bit more complicated, right? You have in Atlanta and a bunch of other markets, which, by the way, most of the foreclosures in this country are, or not most, but a majority of the foreclosures are kind of concentrated in about 10 or 12 states. And really, it's 10 or 12 metropolitan areas, right? It's Atlanta, Chicago, the entire state of Michigan, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Florida, South Florida, and pieces of Florida all over the place are dreadful. And then you have sort of some odd states, like places like in California that are absolutely horrible, where property prices are down about 60-70%. You know, but there's just these like 10 or 12 places, and I write about it all the time for Money Watch, CBS Money Watch. Everywhere else in the country has started to feel a little bit more normal. Not a lot normal. Like, there's nowhere that's really normal except maybe North Dakota. But that's because their unemployment rate is at less than 3%. So you want to have a job, want to have a house that's going up in value, move to North Dakota. But you've got just, in my mind, bigger things that are going on rather than just the government putting out an incentive program. We saw that a couple of years ago where they gave people up to, like, say, $10,000 to buy a house, or $8,000, I guess. And in California, they doubled that to get people to buy new houses. So people were getting, like, $18,000 of a tax credit, right? Dollar-for-dollar reduction in taxes. Not even a deduction, a credit. And that caused a few houses to be sold. But what ended up happening is we, the people, ended up paying about $48,000 per house for that. and it was a very limited temporary help, and then it completely collapsed behind it. So I don't think that just the government saying, okay, now we're going to say homeowners are, you know, open for business. They are doing things. I mean, mortgage interest rates are going to stay at this low level, the Fed says, for till 2014. That's, you know, their latest guidance. That is government help.
And what's interesting, even with that said, it really hasn't motivated anyone.
Well, now you have another problem, which is that mortgage lenders don't really want to make these loans, and they are looking at people through, whereas before, if you had a pulse, you could buy a house,
correct,
and today it's very difficult to get approved. Even people who make lots of money and have great credit are having trouble getting approved. And so there are other factors at work here. Now, you might say, why doesn't the government just allow anybody who wants to refinance? Well, I've been saying that for 3 years on this show, week in and week out. Now there's some talk that the government may try to do that. But the problem is, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, if they have to refinance those mortgages, if they have to write down principals, they already owe the American taxpayer $150 billion. So they're way deep in the hole. There's a lot of resistance to having them be even deeper in the hole, which is basically on the backs of the U.S. taxpayers. And so there's fighting going on between Sean Donovan, who runs HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the guys who are in and out running Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and a new head of Fannie Mae just left, is leaving again, because they don't want to be the fall guys, and the government doesn't want to pay them $5 million a year, which is what they, as a quasi-public company that's in bankruptcy, think they should be earning. There's so much going on at cross purposes that it is no wonder to me that the housing industry is not getting any better. And I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, build a new bridge and everybody will come. I think there is so many cross purposes going on that until you sort that out and put these pieces of the puzzle in a better way, you're not going to get what you're hoping for, which is, you know, some houses getting sold.
Well, you know, I guess I'm not hearing our politicians have any type of suggestions or remedies.
Completely agree on both sides of the aisle, because they don't know what to do.
No, they don't, and that's sad.
It's really sad. We deserve better than this. But you can't, I really don't believe you can solve this economic problem on platitudes and ridiculous commentary and pointing fingers. This is just people don't understand. The housing industry is in a depression. It is down. When I said the numbers early in the show, I don't know if you heard, but the official number of homes sold in all of last year, new homes, 302,000. It is the lowest number.
Nationwide.
Oh,
my goodness.
It is the lowest number since they started keeping track in 1963. It is the third lowest or fourth lowest year in a row. And we have had so many home builders go out of business. There's never been a recovery from a recession without the housing industry kicking in, which it isn't, because it employs so many people on so many different levels. And you are down 80%, 90% from the homes, the number of these of new homes that were built at the height of the market. And even if you say, well, let's just go back to a more normal year, we should be selling 700,000 to 800,000 new homes a year. And we're still down 60%. It's a depression any way you look at it. And it's so frustrating to me as a person who has commented on housing and written about housing and written 13 books and, you know, I don't know, 1,000 weeks of columns, to watch the destruction of this very American and very important industry.
By the way, I bought one of your books because I was teaching a class on home ownership, and that, I think it was one of the earlier books. It's kind of like Common Sense Buying.
Yeah, 100 questions every first-time home buyer should ask, probably.
I recommend anybody that's even considering buying a home, whether it's today or 5 or 10 years from now, to purchase that book, because it was very, very good.
Thank you, Paul. I have to tell you, I am the biggest optimist in the world, right? Because
we have to be.
2 years ago, I wrote a book, a new book called Buy, Close, Move In, that help people navigate this mess and still buy a home. And I have to tell you, of all of my books, and I have about 1 million books in print, I think we sold 5,000 copies.
Oh, my goodness.
It was like the biggest. And it's my favorite book. I think it's one of the best books I've ever written. And it's just a disaster.
You know, if that was 10 years ago, you probably would have sold tenfold.
Right.
But I think that's, I mean, it's unfortunately, it's just kind of a, the timing. But, you know, I too see always the glass half full, and I think things will come around, but I just thought, to get it, you know, all you need sometimes is a nudge.
You do. And that's what government is good at. And they've tried with the loan modifications. They're trying to keep homes out of foreclosure. Now they're going to try and apply more pressure to get the banks to write down the principals. There's so many things that they're trying to do, but to give you that nudge. And so far, it just hasn't worked. But you know what? Whenever they announce a new one, I'm going to be here talking about
it. Okay.
Thank you for your call,
Paul. Have a nice day.
You too. 47 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Klink Show, 404-872-0750. Rob joins us on the line from Smyrna. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, I have questions about, I have a home in Fayetteville, and I no longer live there. I moved out for very other reasons, but my daughter's still living in the home. I've not made a payment on that house since September of 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, and they won't, my credit is destroyed.
Yep.
I mean, it's in the 500s.
Yep.
And just on that house, I've never missed another bill or anything. And my question is there any way to get the bank either to foreclose or to accept a short sale? I mean, they're not doing anything. The house has been listed as a short sale. Well, since October, it's been listed for $159,000.
Why do you want them to foreclose on it?
Well, because it's...
I mean, your daughter's living there for free.
Right. Because I want to fix my credit eventually.
Okay.
You know, it's been 3 years, almost 3.5 years, and my credit is in the 500s. At some point, I'm going to have to buy a car, or I'm going to have to... I'm going to need my credit to be better.
Right. So, I don't know of any way to get a lender to force a foreclosure. You've stopped making payments. I assume you're still paying the taxes on the property.
They're paying the taxes on the property.
You're not paying any expenses at all?
I have no expense. I have not paid anything on that house since September of 08.
And they've not listed it for a foreclosure sale?
No. They had actually started the process for a foreclosure, and I called the bank. I thought the letter they sent me to, this is back a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I called them to ask when I needed to be out of the house. And instead, the phone number on the paperwork sent me to a lawyer's office that said they could stop it and get me a modification. So I paid them about $2,000, and they did stop the foreclosure. And the modification they got me was actually $300 a month more than the original payments were.
Yeah, that's a complete and total scam.
Right. But, well, hey, $2,000, and I lived in the house for another year, so realistically, I got my money's worth.
No, you did get your money's worth, but I hate these lawyers who are, whatever. That's a different story, and you didn't call about that. So they stopped the foreclosure, and now you just can't get them to foreclose.
Well, right, and that was, I want to say that was summer of 2010.
I hate to say this, but I want you to talk to a lawyer about whether you can just simply abandon the property and transfer the deed back to the lender if they're not going to do it. And the way to do that is, I talked about this earlier, call the Atlanta Bar Association, ask for the head of the real estate committee, tell her what's happened to you, and ask for some assistance in trying to find the right attorney who can help contact the bank and say, listen, we're moving out of this property. It's yours. You've been paying for it entirely. We don't have anything to do with it anymore, and we consider this foreclosed. And to see if they can somehow get the bank to move forward with this. But, you know, in Atlanta, it's usually very fast, but you must have fallen through some tracks, and God knows that lawyer just did a number for you. So I guess you did get more than your money's worth. 404-872-0750, 51 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in a minute with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkBlink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Klink Show. So this week in the State of the Union, President Obama talked about how they're going to try to get more help for homeowners. And a couple of the ideas that are being kicked around this week is something called HAMP Tier 2. So we have HAMP 2.0. Don't get confused. Stay along here. Play along at home. HAMP 2.0 is for the new version of HAMP where people are way underwater can refinance. HARP 2.0. But this is now HAMP Tier 2. Home Affordable Modification Program Tier 2. And what it's going to do is triple the incentives that are paid to banks to reduce mortgage principal to a maximum of 63 cents for every dollar of debt forgiven. So investors who rent out their properties would now be eligible to refinance under the new rules. They extended the deadline for HAMP loan modifications for a whole year till the end of 2013. And they're, what they're trying to do by offering these lenders more money is to push them into forgiving debt on homes that have lost a huge amount of value. So I don't know when this is actually going to kick in, but we're supposed to all get more information in the next few weeks on this. Now, there's a lot of opposition. I just kind of outlined some of that into one of our earlier callers. The Federal Housing Finance Agency, which is charged with minimizing losses to the companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and taxpayers, the guy who's running that, Edward DeMarco, he has to accept the administration offer. And what he has said is that forgiving mortgage debt could cost Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac another $100 billion. So they would be at $250 billion of loss. We're going to have to just see what is going to happen. DeMarco, who's independent of the Obama administration, has resisted these policies, and we're not quite sure what he's going to do. But we will watch, and we will continue to report. Be sure to tune in next week for another edition of the Elise Glink Show. Adam Goldfein is next. Have a wonderful Sunday, everybody, and I'll talk to you again soon. They found me when not at home.